And the Roland Hour number two of Gwen and Chris for a Monday. Chris Ello, Tony Gwynn Jr.'s in Seattle. Bus is leaving right now. They're heading over to the ballpark. Padres and Mariners. Tony will rejoin us once he gets over there. It's not Safeco Field anymore, is it, Scrape? I forgot the name of the ballpark, honestly. They changed it.
Is it T-Mobile Park?
Maybe. I might give you that. I'm honestly not sure. T-Mobile Park, is that right?
Let me see.
I know it was Safeco for the longest time.
Stadium.
T-Mobile Park. You're right. T-Mobile Park. Tonight, 6:40 is the start of the ball game, and it'll be Bryce Miller for the Mariners, right-hander, fireballer. 2-5 this year. Been sitting out quite a while.
Yeah, he's on my fantasy team. So.
Making just a second return start. J.P. Sears, much better. His second time out for the Padres. The left-hander will get his third start tonight in Seattle. Fingers are crossed on that, Scrabe. Sears, although he pitched six innings and allowed just one run against the Giants, a lot of deep fly balls, right? I mean, Fernando took a homer away. Saw Laureano scraping his back of his jersey on the fence a couple times. Sears does give up those fly balls.
But if there is a stadium that is like Petco Park, it is T-Mobile Park.
That's what I was going to say. You're reading my mind. I think this is a park where hopefully he can get away with that. He has already faced the Mariners twice this year while he was with the Athletics and pitched okay, but lost both games. So that's a little... just a little background on tonight's action for J.P. Sears, the lefty. Mariners are going with all right-handers in this series, which means we won't have to hear any Ryan O'Hearn complaints. He'll be in the lineup for sure.
Okay, so can we talk about the game on Friday night?
Sure.
Did he start 2-for-2 on Friday night?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, he had a big hit. I tell you, he had a big hit. His first hit, he hit one, muscled one kind of the other way against the shift.
Yeah.
Second one was a big hit because it came in the inning where the Padres got their two runs.
Yes.
It moved Manny from first to third. It was a big hit.
Yes.
For sure.
I kept looking at Chris every time he hit the ball, and Chris just gave me this wry smile of, this guy is going to be the death of me.
He's going to be the death of me because everybody's, you know, putting words in my mouth. That's the thing. Tony and I both said that Ryan O'Hearn is a really good player who mashes right-handed pitchers. And all we were trying to do was give reasoning as to why he wasn't in the lineup against lefties and that particular night. And ever since then, he had a home run against the lefties.
He's been a machine.
And now we're idiots. So,
hey, no. We actually can pinpoint going back to when things turned for the Padres because Ryan O'Hearn, we'll look back on that.
Well, look, to me, pointing out every time he gets a hit is similar to me if I went on the air and said, well, he went 0 for 4 yesterday, so he sucks.
Are you saying it's just not true.
My point is you give me an example of one home run and say, you're wrong. I'm not wrong. He went 0 for 4 yesterday. You're wrong. And that sounds silly too, doesn't it?
It does. It does sound silly because he could go 0-for-4 one day, like you said, go 4-for-4 the next, go 0-for-5 the next day.
And honestly, I'm not going to sit here and root against him every time he comes up.
No, we want this team to win.
Yeah, I want the. He's batting right in the middle of the lineup. I need him to keep coming through. So,
yes.
Look, Sears will be in there. Do we have a lineup yet tonight? It's a
I'm
tad
looking,
early.
I don't see
I haven't
it.
Seen one yet. J.P. Sears, by the way, last time against Seattle, pitched in the minor league ballpark, 4 1/3 innings, allowed... two earned runs to the Mariners, struck out 6 in that ball game. The A's would end up losing 3-1, and Sears would be the losing pitcher. That was on July 28th, so he just faced the Mariners not too long ago. He also faced them in the very first game of the season, 6 2/3, gave up 2 runs, and was the loser in that game, 2-1. So, like I said, Sears pitched well in both games against the M's, but did not win either of them. We'll see what happens tonight at 6:40. Sam Levitt's pregame show at 5:40 this afternoon. There's no day baseball today, right? Everything's under the lights.
I believe so.
As it were. So no scores to report, but some games to predict. And we will do that right now in our Daily Gambit.
Do you like money?
I think about money a lot.
you like money without doing anything?
Winning.
Do you want to make money while watching sports?
I think Washington is a mortal lock.
Washington! Woohoo!
If you answered yes, this is your segment. Just don't blame us when you lose.
Well, nothing is ever your fault.
It's your game. Take it.
Gwen and Chris go through the top bets of the day in The Daily Gambit on 97.3 The Fan.
Daily Gambit is our daily sports betting segment here on Gwen and Chris. Please, everybody, gamble responsibly. We made some bets. We did. By the way, we got to spend some time on Far Corner a little bit later because Far Corner was awesome and everybody that showed up was amazing. There were so many people there.
Huge crowd. Couldn't even hear ourselves.
I heard reports that we sounded great, but Chris and I couldn't hear us.
I couldn't hear anything. And Max, who runs the place.
Yes, he was amazing.
He took such great care of us.
He was focused on us. He got us pizza, food, all that stuff was great.
But he's got a really nice place there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's relaxing, comfortable, even with that many people in there.
Yeah.
I felt, like it was, air. It's wide open. Air flows through there.
Yes. There's different areas for you. If you want a quieter area,
there's
an area for that.
Yeah, the other part is just a restaurant off to the other side. So if you haven't been to Far Corner, either do it, for a dinner while the Padres are out of town.
Yeah.
Or, make it part of your pregame because it was
definitely
a lot of fun.
Make it a part of your pregame.
A lot of fun
and
Friday.
Please go support him during the offseason.
Thank you,
we were talking about that.
Well done.
And I was like, we'll help you get some people down there. So go visit Far Corner in the offseason.
It does seem apparent, judging by the response I get on Twitter, that everybody does listen to everything I say. I don't necessarily agree with it, but they certainly listen to it.
All right, we're going to have to take your Twitter away like you and Tony took my Twitter away.
I'm going to have to, go stand
a couple years ago, they took my Twitter away, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me.
I know, I might have to join you.
All right, the bets we made on Friday night. First one, Dodgers -1.5 on the run line over the Padres, and the Padres won this game 2-1, and we picked the Padres, so we win that one.
Oh, we won, because the Dodgers are favored.
Yes. Over, under, total score 7.5 runs in that game. You went over, Chris. I went under, and it was 3.
Yeah, 2-1.
Yeah,
not much that night.
The Yankees and the Red Sox on Friday night. Yankees were -1.5 on the run line. You said Yankees. I said Sox. Sox won 2-1, I believe.
Or Sox
1-0, 2-1.
Sox took 2 of 3 over there. 3 of 4.
Yeah, 3 of 4
over the weekend. Yeah.
49ers -3.5 against the Chargers.
I never even looked at this.
After the Padres game, I turned on.
This actually did take place. They played the game, huh?
Yes, it was a brutal game. In the fourth quarter,
final
I was
game
actually
of preseason
watching it.
Is so bad.
There were two guys, one for the 49ers and one for the Chargers, that just completely let punts go off their face mask.
Oh, really?
It was just bad. But the 49ers ended up winning 30-23. They were 3.5-point favorites. We both chose the 49ers.
Woo-hoo.
Finally, the Lynx.
We cashed the ticket on a preseason game.
The Minnesota Lynx were -6.5 over the Indiana Fever. And you chose Fever. I chose Lynx. The Fever law, the Lynx won, but they did not cover. So 95-90. You win that bet.
Close, though.
Yes.
All right, let's start a new week. We'll start fresh. I think we both ended up about the same last week, or about 7 or 8 games over 500.
It feels that
way. We
didn't
do too badly.
No, it feels that way.
We got the Mariners' favorite tonight over the San Diego Padres. Mariners by 1.5.
I don't understand.
You know, I said the Padres have a slightly better record than the Mariners overall, but the game is in Seattle, and here's something I should point out because it's something I'm keeping an eye on. Padres have only won one series on the road this year against a winning team. Only one. The only team with a winning record that they've beaten a series is the Brewers, the best team in the league.
Which is totally
weird.
Sense.
But the Padres have not beaten any other winning team in a series. This would be high time to do it this week because the Mariners are clearly a winning team.
Yes.
I'll go first. I'll be honest with you. J.P. Sears is not give me a lot of confidence, but I'll take the Padres. I mean, I got to right now. I mean, now every game matters. I can't just give one away at this point.
Just intentionally walk the dumper every time.
The dumper.
You said you're going to take the Mariners?
No, I'm taking the Padres.
Oh, I'm going to take
can't take the Mariners.
No, I'm going to take the Padres too.
You can intentionally walk Cal Raleigh, but Suarez, Naylor, Julio Rodriguez. They got some players.
They do.
They're good. 8.5 runs for this game, over under, in the large confines of T-Mobile Park. 8.5 runs.
Under.
Sounds like an under with these two teams, but I'm going to go over. Padres got to score tonight because they're going to get much tougher with Castillo and Wu. Who pitches more innings tonight? Bryce Miller or J.P. Sears? Sears got through six last time.
He did. He pitched well.
He pitched well. He gave up some loud outs, though.
Which is fine. They're, as Mudd would say on the TV, a long foul ball, or a long, yeah, a long foul ball, strike one.
Okay, I agree, but it still starts your heart every time it happens. Miller's still coming back from injury, so I'll give Sears the nod here.
I'm going to give Sears the nod,
you
too.
You are, huh?
Yeah, Miller has not been the same guy from last year. I mean, mostly he's been injured, but when he has pitched this year, it has not been great.
Dodgers and Reds, 8 runs up in L.A. tonight. Hunter Green pitching for Cincy. Sheehan going for the Dodgers. 8 runs. Mm. Dodgers, Los Rojos.
I'm going to go over.
I am too. Who gets more strikeouts tonight? Scooble at the A's.
Okay.
-2 against Hunter Green at the Dodgers. I'm going to take Scooble against the A's. Seems like an 8-inning, 12-strikeout game for Scooble tonight.
It does seem like that.
Going Scooble?
I'm going to have to go.
I'd love to see Hunter Green pitch one of his, you know, gems tonight.
No, I'm going
to
go Green.
All right. Help us out, Hunter. We wouldn't mind. We got the Aces in the Sky, WNBA action tonight. Not going to worry about the game. But who's going to get more rebounds? Angel Reese, -2. Or Asia Wilson. Angel Reese.
-2.
For whatever reason, continues to be one of the most polarizing players in the WNBA. The WNBA, I love the WNBA, but they're focused on the wrong stuff, Scraby.
Yeah.
Everything is about the controversy and the foul and whether it's the refs are terrible and whether people are trying to hurt and whether Caitlin Clark is this or Angel Reese is that or... You know, just let us watch the games. The games are pretty good, but nobody pays attention to the actual games.
Yeah, that's the big problem. Is that no one watches the games. They just
want to
join in on the gossip.
And ESPN doesn't help, right? Because after every game, you know, round of games, they're like, well, here's somebody pushing somebody, and somebody got mad, and the ref missed the call. And, yeah, did anybody make a jump shot? Were there any three-pointers?
No, Chris. The answer is no.
All right, Angel Reese averages 12.2 rebounds, Wilson 10.2, so it's exactly 2 difference. I think you're up.
I'm going Angel Reese.
Hey, gotta go with Angel Reese.
What is she's like Dennis Rodman.
She is a rebounding machine. What do they call it when she misses and puts her...
Me-bound.
A me-bound.
Which is really funny.
That's funny, but, you know, it's part of the issue. Because some people say it with, you know, with disdain.
Yeah.
And while she gets his me bounds.
I'm like, hey, it's kind of funny.
I'll take Asia Wilson. But it should be close. We got an interesting tennis tonight at the U.S. Open. Venus Williams is playing singles. Like coming out of retirement at 40-some-odd years old. Yeah.
I thought,
Venus Williams, one of the greatest players in the history of the sport. She's going to play the 11th seed, Carolina Mukova. Tonight in New York, Mukova is favored by 6.5 games. They just don't think Venus even has a chance coming out of retirement here.
6.5 games is a lot.
That's
though.
A lot. You got to win 6-3, 6-2 in order to cover that.
That's complete domination. I don't think Venus is joining this just to get crushed.
I'm going to root for Venus to keep it close. I wouldn't be surprised, though. 40-some-odd years old. I don't know exactly how old she is, but she's 40-plus.
I'll go Williams, or Venus Williams.
You're going to go Venus, too. We're both going Venus. Also tonight, Carlos Alcaraz and American Riley Opelka. I just like that name. Riley Opelka.
She was born 1980, so she's 45.
Wow. 45!
Yeah.
Playing the 11th ranked player in the world.
I may change my thinking. No, I'm going to keep it.
Come on, Venus. I don't know how she's going to win a couple games there, but we'll see. 34.5 games total for this one. Alcaraz and Opelka. Basically, if you say under, you're thinking Alcaraz wins in straight sets. If you go over, you're thinking Opelka gets a set somewhere along the line.
I think Alpaca is going to get something around.
You're going with Opelka?
Alpaca.
Opelka. So you're going to, you're taking over then.
Yeah, I'm going to go over.
34 and a half game.
Yeah.
Alcaraz doesn't like to mess around, but it is a night match. And those seem to be always kind of fun at the U.S. Open.
And the big city lights of New York.
Yeah, Opelka's a pretty decent player. He's not ranked, but I've seen him play some pretty good tennis. I think he'll keep it close. I'll take over as well. All right, we're off to take a quick time out here. I got a second before we go to the break, so we don't want to break too early now. I wanted to get this in because I just thought of it. Now, it's a shot at Rob Brenly.
Why? What happened now?
Because this was so bad. And I really hope that it gets a little bit more attention because I haven't seen anything about it on a national level yet. But I saw the clip tweeted out. Now, again, should I just say this because we're in this day and age, Scraby? It was tweeted.
I had no idea what you're talking about.
Okay, I'm going to tell you in a second. But it was tweeted out and it was taken from the broadcast of the Diamondbacks Reds game on Saturday.
Okay.
The only reason I'm saying that I hesitate is because people do fake some of this stuff now, and yes. I get worried about that.
Yes.
So if we find out this was all faked, then I have to take it back. I mean, that's the only way I can put this, right? But anyway, here's the clip.
I'm trying to look for it.
Yeah. See, that's the thing that's worrying me, that it might be fake.
It might be fake because I'm not seeing anything about him.
Well, let me just type in Bob Brenly comment. Hang on, before I say this, because Bob Brenly's easy to pick on, but it's not fair if he really didn't do this, and I don't see it.
I don't see it either.
You know what? I hate to do this out there, but I'm going to take a minute to look a little more research before I tell you what I saw.
I think
because if what I saw happened, then it's really bad. And so I don't want to say
if it did happen, I think we would be seeing news.
You'd think you would.
Yeah.
Because wait till I'll tell you in the break, Scraby, and then we'll search it out. I'm going to be.
Tony says, what an organic radio tease. That was organic.
It was. It wasn't meant to be.
No,
it wasn't meant to be a tease. I meant to just tell you the story. But now the more I think about it, I'm a little worried that maybe, you know.
You're doing the right thing.
They make so much stuff up now, you just don't know.
You're doing the right thing.
So let's make sure that this actually happened, or we'll do our best to find it. And if it did, then I'm gonna lay it on thick.
All right, we need to go to break then.
All right, we'll do the break, and then we'll check it out. Come back, see what we over
we find.
We uncover here next. All right, Scraby and I hard at work during that last segment.
I'm actually kind of proud of ourselves, Chris.
I think you guys are going to be happy out there. We did come up with what I wanted to come up with. So we are going to be able to play you this Bob Brenly clip.
It's not great audio.
You're not going to be able to hear it too well, but I will tell you, you know, exactly what he said and why this guy should have been fired a long time ago. Like, he shouldn't even be here to say these clips anymore. But he did it again on Saturday, and I'd like, you know, it's rude. But
so Zach Maxwell's.
Well, let's give him the lineup first because people like the lineup.
Sorry,
and then we're going to give you the Bob Brenly latest. All right, go for the
leading
lineup.
Off in playing right field, Fernando Tatis Jr. Playing first base, batting second, Luis Arraez. Manny Machado batting third, playing third. Ryan O'Hearn DHing in the fourth spot, the cleanup spot. Bogarts hitting fifth, playing shortstop. Gavin Sheets, sixth, playing left field. Laureano, seventh, playing center field. Cronenworth, eighth, playing second base. And Fermin catching for
Sears. That's been pretty much the lineup go-to. Remember, Merrill's on the injured list.
They did
officially
put him on. We never talked about that, but
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's officially on the injured list now. So that's kind of the lineup they're going with. I will just tell you, and we're going to I'm going to talk about it later because I don't have time right now, but there's a lot of anger. Okay. There's a Twitter amount of anger about Arraez batting second, and there's even more about him playing first base when Ryan O'Hearn is DHing. O'Hearn should be at first. Just to read some of these people, and you're right, we shouldn't give them so much play today.
Well, immediately we just got two comments saying, why is that the...
Yeah.
I don't understand why we're trying to change things while things are going okay.
That's exactly it. The last I checked, the Padres are tied for first place. Why is everybody so unhappy?
I don't know. I get the want to be better and have the best lineup out there, and I'm not sure if Luis Arraez in the lineup or out of the lineup makes the best lineup, but... I don't know why we're complaining so much about a team that just took 2 of 3 from the Dodgers.
Should feel
and took 3 of 4 from the Giants. They won 5 games on this homestand. That's pretty good.
They're tied for first place. I think people should be happy, but people, a lot of them, are still miserable. And
I don't think it's miserable.
I think it says something about them more than anything else, to be honest with you. I will say this, though. I know that Ben and Woods, or at least Ben and Paul, when we were on the round table, they also don't think Arraez should be batting second, and they stated their reasons why on the round table last week.
But
I'm digressing because I want to give the Bob Brenly story, and we're going to run out of time. Here's Bob Brenly. This is the same guy who had to take a leave of absence many years ago because of rude comments about Marcus Stroman, racist stuff about his do-rag. This is a guy that said that Fernando, Tatis, maybe the chain around his neck is weighing him down. That irked a lot of people. Mike Clevenger, of all people, came out and was very critical of Bob Brenly, who said that Clevenger's windup looks like a polka dance. Anyway, some of it is funny. Some of it borders on really, really troubling.
The polka dance is the least of my worries.
Me too. But I'm trying to give as many examples as I can come up with. This is the latest Bob Brenly, and it came the other night with the Reds debuting a new relief pitcher by the name of Zach Maxwell.
Big Sugar.
Big guy, 6'6", 275 pounds, Zach Maxwell.
We're going to try it. Hopefully this works.
Hopefully you can hear some of this, but if not, I will paraphrase what is said here.
The whole supporting cast here with him, family, friends, the whole thing in the stands. They've been taking pictures down there on the field before the game yesterday.
With a wide-angle lens.
That's a good call.
Yeah, that's all you needed to hear.
Wide-angle
Zach
lens.
Maxwell's, heavy set, 6'6", 275. The play-by-play guy is saying he's making his major league debut. He has family, friends here. He had everybody here. They were down on the field taking pictures before the game. Bob Brenly cracks in with using a wide-angle lens. And then the other guy goes, oh, yes, exactly. I don't know how much, and people put it up properly. It's a fat-shaming thing. And there's a lot of people that are probably a few pounds overweight who watch these telecasts. I just don't know how long you let Bob Brenly run free and run amok like this.
Here's the thing, Chris.
Yeah.
I am all for Bob Brenly shaming when he deserves it, but I do remember me making a big old joke about the woman who got stuck under the gondola a couple weeks ago. So she was heavy set and I was making jokes about her, so I can't, it would be rude if I were to say Bob Brenly's in the wrong, but then play a commercial break of me making fun of someone.
Don't know that for. We were pointing out that was part of the story. I don't know. This is rubbed some people the wrong way.
I can understand why it is, but this doesn't. I mean, he shouldn't have said it. You just don't comment on players' appearances. Just common knowledge, common sense. You just don't do it.
If this was a one-off, as we just go by the boards very quickly,
no one would notice.
The fact is, it's not a one-off.
Bob
Brenly.
That people are looking for him to make a mistake, and they will jump on mistakes.
I'm surprised there hasn't been a bigger outcry, because we had to dig this out to make sure this happened. More Gwynn and Chris is coming up. When we come back, Tony is at the stadium, which is a good thing, because you got a bunch of questions in our Padres pen pals. That's next. All right, Chris Ello, Tony Gwynn Jr. in Seattle. T-Mobile Park, that's where Tony is. That's where the Padres are. They got the Mariners tonight at 6:40 p.m. I got one quick baseball story before we go to today's Padre Pen Pals guys. Good news, I guess, but a little eye-opening at the same time. Angels manager Ron Washington eyeing a return in 2026, saying today that he's recovering from quadruple bypass heart surgery.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That is serious.
First time he's addressed the health issues since he was sidelined in June. I mean, I think he's as good as he can be health-wise right now, but still has quite a bit of recovery ahead.
That is wild.
Best of luck to Ron Washington. Quadruple bypass. I didn't even know where
that's all four chambers, I think.
Yeah, there's a doctor out there listening somewhere who knows more than we do just how insane that operation must be. Like, I just hear it, and I'm like, wow. But I can't, like, imagine, right? You know what I mean? I can't come to grips with exactly what happens there.
I'm reading it right here. The four of the heart's coronary arteries are blocked and need a detour to restore blood flow.
Ooh. Man.
That's crazy.
Best of luck to Ron Washington. Yeah. All right.
That's crazy.
Padres take 2-3 over the Dodgers. Everyone should be in a good mood, right? Let's find out in today's Padres Pen Pals.
It's time to ask the experts, Padres fans.
I was hoping maybe you can bring a little insight into it.
Write us, tweet us, Facebook us, send a carrier pigeon for Chris. He thinks they're cute. Aww. Padres Pen Pals begins.
Hurt the pelota big time.
Now, 97.3 The Fan.
If you love Mediterranean food, you should try Spiro's for authentic Mediterranean cuisine in Coronado or La Jolla. For dining or takeout options, visit spiroscuisine.com. You know what Sam Levitt ate on the game I went to Wednesday of last week? I forgot to tell you, Chris.
Spiro's.
Yes, he came back with a Horia Tiki bowl, and he just shoveled it into his mouth.
I will also say that somebody asked him the next day when we were there on Friday, you and I.
Yeah?
Hey! What was that you were eating Wednesday night? It looked delicious. Sammy said, yeah, it was. It was Spiro's.
Hey, Sammy, Sammy is eating, man. He can get down.
Oh, yeah.
He's not messing around.
Well, in his position.
Shoveling is how it looks most of the time.
Keep your hands and legs away.
Totally. Right.
I mean, he's a guy who probably has a 20-minute window to get food throughout the day.
I was just getting ready to say that's why. He's always, like, trying to squeeze a meal in somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere.
By the way, since we're talking press box stuff, congrats to Jeff Sanders of the UT.
Oh, yeah.
Who caught a foul ball
Friday
night. Very similar to the one that I had caught earlier in the week.
The only problem was, twice
last week.
Yes, it did. And Jeff Sanders calmly caught the ball. I was upset that everybody gave him a standing ovation and no one clapped for you.
Oh, no, nobody clapped for me at all.
Maybe they gave him a standing ovation.
Did they? I wasn't in there when it happened. I just saw it from afar.
It was quite the spectacle.
I guess it's because they just expected me to make the catch.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Can of
corn. I'm glad it worked out. Glad it didn't end up in a broken hand. Because that's how a lot of them end up.
No, it was like one of those. It's weird because to get into the press box, as Chris said, you have to hit a pretty sharp foul ball at a right
angle.
That's
what I'm saying, dog.
But this one is high and slow, and somehow it comes in.
Yeah. Both of the ones that went in were easy catches.
It's crazy.
Usually, them bad boys is coming in there steaming.
Agreed.
Yeah, I'll never forget the time one came out my head, and I moved faster than I could ever move. All right. Let's go back to Friday night. Because I think you could say the game was decided by Mason Miller. On a scale of 1 to 10, Tony, how would you rank the Mason Miller pick at first base to complete the double play Friday night?
I mean, given that, you know, listening to him talk about it, a 10. First of all, Mason Miller is a huge human being.
He's not small.
So, like, doing that particular move when you don't ever do it at his size is not easy at all. And I tell you, he stuck his nose in there, man, and it came up with that pick. And it was the biggest play. It was probably one of the biggest plays of the game. I mean, that ball gets by him or anything like that. We got a different conversation happening that night.
Yeah,
but instead, he picks it up. I mean, him getting over there, he was on doing his job, he got there, and he got there quick enough to give himself time to actually set his feet to do it. You know, if he gets there a hair late, that plays even harder because he's trying to find the bag and pull this ball out of the dirt. And so, yeah, I give it a 10, man. It was, given the circumstance, when it happened, who it was, he gets a 10.
Chris, 1 to 10.
I said 10 at the time. No question. Really difficult play. And you can practice that all you want, but they don't. Yeah. Let's go back to spring training for a second. When you practice covering first, which I did a million times as a pitcher, you practice covering first and getting throws from a first baseman. You don't practice covering
like
first.
Lobs.
Right. You don't practice first with some guy drilling the ball over to you from second base in the dirt like that. So, I mean, I doubt he'd ever even had to try and do that before. And just to add to it, everything Tony said, one more thing. Because there was a runner coming to third base, the catcher, Fermin, could not back that play up. He had to stay at home. So, as Tony said, if the ball kicked away even a little bit, it would have been a tie game. So, I mean, everything was on the line on that pickup, and he came through. That was great.
He did. It was awesome. Did you guys see the umpire shake his head after Mike Schilt challenged and was, like, upset that he was...
Chris Guccione.
You know, can we... Here's the deal. We don't know that that's what he was shaking his head
that's
at.
True.
The camera just happened to pan over. I'm almost positive one of our players said something to him about missing the call in the first place.
Oh, that makes more
which
sense.
Which is why he was like, you know, however that, whatever
man, the
face
internet,
he made.
The internet can create some great narratives.
Tell me about it. It is a narrative farming place for sure.
It really is, because I honestly didn't see it. And so, and then I watched the replay, and I was like, "Oh yeah, he's really
the way,
angry."
If you're watching the game, the way that it is cut, right? I understand why people immediately went to that, because obviously the challenge happens, and then they pan to Chris Guccione, and he's like shaking his head in frustration. But if you notice, he's looking towards his right. I think it's probably because somebody said something about missing the call.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense. That makes a lot more sense.
I'll also say that that's the way replay was intended.
Yeah,
right?
Quick, too.
Even for somebody,
100%.
Even for somebody like myself who wishes they didn't have it, I was really glad they had it at that moment.
It was
in time.
So quick. It was so quick.
So,
Chris, you're going to be up first on this one. Coming into the season, this is actually one conversation I had over the weekend. Coming into the season, the expectations for the Padres was to make the playoffs in one of the wild card spots. It seems like some have changed their expectations now that they're tied for first place with 31 games to go. So, Chris, is it fair for fans to move the goalpost throughout a season?
Of course. teams, predictions are just that at the beginning of the season. I don't think too many Brewer fans were making World Series plans. They have a right to be thinking about it now. Their team has the best record in baseball by a wide margin.
But is there expectation as a Brewer fan now that they have to win the World Series?
No, but I think that you want to believe that they can make the World Series, just like I think a Padre fan wants to believe they can win this division now. And hopefully, I mean, it's still going to be really tough because you win the division, you're also going to have to try to catch the Phillies if you want to get a bye. But, I mean, those are things you want to go for. I think here's the other thing that I was thinking about, and Tony's thoughts on this. Right now, both the Dodgers and Padres have 74 wins. If let's say the winner goes 20-11 down the stretch, which would be a pretty good record.
Yeah, 94 wins.
That'd be 94 wins. I think we all thought the Padres were kind of capable of 94 at the beginning of the season. I don't think anybody thought the Dodgers would be as low as 94. So,
yeah, no,
you know
no,
what I mean?
Weren't.
The Padres are kind of having a season like maybe we thought. But the fact that the Dodgers have reeled back to the pack it's changed expectations.
Tony, is it fair for
Great
fans
point.
To move the goalposts throughout a season?
I mean, when you look at it like Chris just explained it, it makes some sense. I don't know that it's moving the goalposts per se. You know what I'm saying? I think... there's a difference between thinking, you know what, Padres would get in as a wild card this year, it'd be tough to win the division, and then all of a sudden, as Chris said, the Dodgers aren't quite living up to the expectation that everybody had put before them, and that they created themselves, if we're being fair, and now kind of changing based off of that. I think that's different than those who were like, man, the Padres are going to suck this year, da 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 da. It's a little bit different for those cats. But I think for the most part, I think everybody in spring training thought the Padres were a playoff team.
Yeah.
I don't think very many people thought differently. And the fact that the Dodgers, you know, haven't been able to live up to what everybody thought they were going to do has changed the kind of the outlook of where the Padres are. But Chris brings up a good point. I think we thought 94 wins would be a good year for the Padres, and that they were something that was capable of doing. They're in range to be able to do that.
All right. I was going to click a button, but we don't have a button to click, so I come back to you guys. Fernando Tatis Jr. earlier today had the play of the week for his robbery against the Giants, a home run robbery. We saw Ramon Laureano rob a home run yesterday. We'll get to that in just 1 second. But the question for you, Tony, is Fernando Tatis Jr. the best right fielder in baseball?
Yes. I can't think of a better one. Certainly not defensively. He's doing a lot of good things right now, and that's despite, you know, however many days it's been, as Chris pointed out at some point this weekend about how many games he's gone. He's doing his job. His job is in that leadoff spot is to find a way to get on base. He's doing that at a higher clip than he's ever done it in his entire career outside of the 82-game season he had his rookie way. I think in a perfect world, he'd be able to provide both, but he's not, and he's adapting to it. And so, yeah, man, the defense has been a thing that it seems like he's been dialed in on even more. And I don't know if it's because of that, but he certainly has made some unbelievable plays. I think he's the best right fielder in baseball.
Chris?
I think that'll probably be how it, you know, ends up, that he's the best. He'll probably get the gold glove again. And he's been, you know, we get to watch him every day. We don't watch other right fielders every day. I will say this, something I think I'm pretty sure about. The catch he made to take away the home run last week against the Giants, I don't think any other right fielder could have done that. He jumped so high.
He did.
And he stayed so long.
How tall that wall is in right
field.
He was over the wall.
Yeah. No, that was
a good stretch, too.
Yeah. No, the only other athlete, I think, who makes that play that's played right field in the past is Michael Jordan. Because he might have been able to get the hang time.
Did he really play right field?
I think he did. He probably would have dropped the ball, but he could have got up there. You know what I mean? Fernando's athleticism is so incredible, and it's great when it's on display like that.
Yeah, and I think he walked 5 times in the series. That's a lot of walk. Yeah, he's been on a lot, so good for him.
Yeah, but then Arraez hits into a double play and the inning ends.
Yes.
That's another discussion for another time.
All right, do we have time? I guess we quickly do this one, and then we'll get to the last one.
Okay.
Why do people, Chris, hate Luis Arraez, and why does he choose a foot race instead of tossing it to the pitcher?
Well, that was honestly the question.
Yes.
I don't know that they hate him. Did they hate him for that? I mean, is he missing out because of that?
No, I think it's two separate questions. Why do people hate Luis Arraez, and why does he choose a foot race instead of tossing it to the pitcher?
I'm pretty sure that every first baseman ever has been taught at some point along the line that if you don't have to make a throw, don't make one. Mm. Only something can go wrong there. So if you can beat him, that's the way to go. Now, most first basemen, I think, are comfortable enough. They just make the toss anyway. Rise is still maybe just more comfortable in racing over there. And as long as he makes it, I don't care how he gets the out.
All right.
Why do they hate him? That's we're going to need another segment for that.
Okay.
There's a long list of reasons, very few of which I agree with.
All right, Tony, why do people hate Luis Arraez, and why does he choose a foot race instead of tossing it to the pitcher?
They don't. I don't know who they is. The small pack that do. Probably because he doesn't have the WRC plus that they're looking for, or
OPS
you know,
plus.
He doesn't do any of those things that they're looking for that they can just add and look at a list and go from there. The second question, in terms of why he doesn't flip, I think Chris is right. I think he had one go wrong in D.C. earlier, and unless he thinks he's not getting there, he's going to take it. Funny thing is watching Nick Pivetta go over there, because for a long time, Nick Pivetta just was baffled why he wasn't getting the ball. And now he just runs over there, and I don't think he expects to get it anymore.
No,
he just is running there to make sure that he's in his spot.
There was a close one, I think, on Saturday's game.
Yes, it was.
Ahead
was it Ohtani,
right?
I think it was.
Yeah, Ohtani, that was close.
He still won.
Yeah, but you know what? If you watch the slow-mo replay, there was no panic in Luis. Luis knew he had it the whole time.
Yeah.
He just kind of hits a bag and kind of curled.
I think Ohtani was faster than he expected him to be. He got there a little quicker.
I do like the scurry from Luis Arraez from fielding the ball to the first base.
Scurries.
All right, last one. Who's up first here? I think it's Tony. I want to talk about fans reaching out over the field for home run balls. Please don't do this, fans. You're going to ruin it for the rest of us and move the front row back. Last week, it was at the expense of a Xander Bogaerts home run. Yesterday, a fan almost interfered with Laureano on that first inning catch. Here's a rules question. In this instance, would it have been better for the Padres if they did interfere? Would the Dodgers have been able to get the sac fly run? What's the rule on this, guys? Do you guys know?
Which one is this?
Yesterday's Laureano, if base is loaded, he robs Teoscar. If a fan did interfere, Teoscar is out, but do the Dodgers get the sac fly, or would they be held off?
Wait, if a fan interferes, they could rule it a grand slam.
They sure could.
That could be worse.
It's a discretionary rule.
But
there is no cut and dry.
If the fan hit the ball and the replay guy in New York, who I don't think we want to trust anymore.
But this goes against what happened to Xander Bogaerts. The fan didn't hit the ball and he got his home run taken away.
They
said he impeded
the view.
Him catching the ball. Right.
Right. So I talked to Mike Winters at length about this last week.
I did too.
He was still hanging over the field of play, which is deemed interfering.
That's
at that
what Mike
point.
Winters did say.
In Laureano's play, I watched. No fan was over that fence. They might have been like getting ready to try to catch it, but they were all behind the wall.
Okay, so all right. Well, that question is moot.
No, but I think the question also is: are they ever going to move the fans back away from the wall?
Well, I don't know.
The answer is let's not do that.
Tickets right there.
Let's not do that.
Yeah, no shot. They want that bad boy. That's how they get you can charge a little bit.
Take
more
a whole row of tickets out that cost $112 a piece. I don't think they're going to do that.
It's just like the NBA. You think they're going to, as small as that floor is, you think they're going to take away some of the courtside seats? No shot.
I mean, this just really goes all the way back to the Bartman thing, which is a long time ago now, but I still believe Bartman did what almost everybody would do.
100%.
Which is reach 100%. For a ball.
But then,
it's a natural thing to do. So, you know, it's part of the game. I have no problem with it. The only time I've ever seen it completely destroyedly, you know, terribly messed up was the Yankee one when Jeffrey Mayer, the Yankee fan, reached over on the home run and against the Orioles in the playoffs a long time ago.
Tony Tarasco in right field.
And Derek Jeter got credit for the home run. But I don't think they had replay in those days. I think they just called it based on what they thought they saw.
They had replay, but they weren't using it for that.
Right. All right, that's it for Padres Pen Pals. When we get back, Chris versus the fans, 833-288-0973.